You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. We're recording this on a Friday, mid-summer holes. I know it's going to air just as the holes are coming to a close, but I'm so exhausted and frazzled after yet another week of working my bottom off while wrangling my two children at home that I really want to say to all of you, I see you, I hear you, I feel you, I know how stretched we are. I know lots of us are lucky. I've got a husband who equally shares everything. My mum is currently taking my child to a play date somewhere and I've forgotten to text her the address, so I better do that in a minute. My son's at an amazing art camp, but it's still hard. Can we all just give each other a virtual pat on the back, please? Because we know it's what we signed up for. We knew having babies would one day involve school holidays. We knew choosing to work alongside raising kids would mean lots of juggling. But Jesus Christ, when life throws you all the curveballs, it throws everyone. And you're busy, it's freaking knackering. And well, there you are. I just wanted to say high fives. Now, Wend, I know you've had a similar week because people, we share a lot. Wendy and I keep WhatsApp in business with our daily exchanges, the last of which was, which gin shall I buy, Wendy?
And I recommended a very nice gin indeed, I think you'll find.
Ladies and gents, it comes with rose petals that you have to sprinkle in it before you drink. Anyway, tell me about your week. What's been going on? You've been frazzled as well, haven't you?
Similar to yours, kids are in various camps. My lovely friend Sarah has ridden to the rescue in a Qashqai this morning and just scooped them up and taken them away to the forest for the day, because recording a podcast with two children in the house is somewhat tricky. But I would like to know if our guest has had a shitty week as we've had so far.
Well, yes. The reason I'm talking about these things is our guest today is someone who takes parental mental health tray seriously, and thank heavens for that. We have asked, nagged, chased, bullied and quite frankly begged for her to come on here because we know she's beloved of all of you, and that's because of her honesty and her willingness to tackle the tough stuff. Gang, please will you welcome Frankie Bridge.
Hi.
How are you, honey? Okay?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
Now, we always start by asking a very, very important question, which hilariously Annie has mistyped on our crib sheet. So what we always ask...
In fact, ask her what's written down because it's funnier.
Yeah, normally it says any sweat, snot or tears in your house this morning, but today it says any swear, snot or tears.
There's always lots of swear in my household.
Good, that makes me feel reassured.
Yeah, you know what? So far, there has been none from the kids, but there has been for me.
Which of the three?
Well, I mean, maybe some sweaty tears. No, not real tears. Just, you know, just when your kids just frustrate you. And yes, you're like, only something really small. So they've not been up that long. But my eldest son, I was downstairs, Parker. I heard someone around the house. I heard doors slam or whatever. And then I kind of forgot that it had happened. And then I walked past our front room and he's just sat in the front room watching his iPad. And I was like, you rude little, like, come and say good morning in the morning. What is wrong with you? So I went in and I was like, Parker. Like, took his headphones off. Yeah.
What, mum?
Yeah, yeah, huh? What do you do in the morning? And he was like, huh? I was like, what do you do when you get up in the morning? Say good morning. Yeah, so why didn't you do that? Oh, yeah, morning. You know, and you're like, I feel like I have raised you better than this. What is wrong with you?
I'm glad you picked him up on it. I think a lot of people wouldn't, you know.
Really? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just, you know, small things like that, I just think they're just like normal everyday manners, and it annoys me when they forget them.
But I think in the holidays, when you're all together for much more time, those really little things just get on your wick much more than they would any other day.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. So not too bad. No one's cried. And Carter just keeps... It's Carter's birthday at the weekend that we're recording this. I don't know when the code's out. And he just comes at me every day with new things that he wants for his birthday.
I love that. The best is when it's the night before and you're tucking them into bed and they said,
yes,
I've changed what I want.
Yeah, I've changed what I want. And you're I've come up with something new. And he has this thing where he hasn't seen this thing that he wants. He's made it up in his head.
Oh, so it doesn't exist.
So he'll come to me and just, yeah, like list an object that he really likes the idea of. So like, mummy, I would really like a skeleton that moves his head to side to side and his arms move like this and his legs walk like this and you just press a button and then it bends over and it says this. And then, you know, like he'll list this whole big thing and they'll go, can you put that in Google? And I'm like, not really, mate. No.
He sounds very creative. I like
he is, but it's just insanely annoying. Like it's cute at first and then after like the 50th idea he's had, you're like, you're going to be majorly upset set on your birthday because none of this stuff bloody exists. Yeah. So
you're getting a box of Lego, son.
Yeah, enjoy
so
that.
So the day before my youngest daughter's birthday, she was six last week, and the day before,
so
as Annie lovingly said, it's always the day before, she came up to me and she said, mummy, I know what I want for my birthday. So oh shit, here we go. And she said, I want a sloth.
An actual live real one.
Yeah, but she can't say sloth, she says sloth. So she wanted a sloth. And I was like, okay, where am I? Like, I can't even get a stuffed sloth by tomorrow morning.
I'd quite like a sloth as well, to be fair.
Well, in fairness, it's a nice request. But what are you supposed to do with that request at 10 o'clock?
Get her a guinea
pig. Day before. No. I got her a puppy last year.
Wend, top tip. Because weirdly, Atty's obsessed with sloths as well. Aldi Special Buys, they're selling them.
What, really? Sloths?
Yeah, stuffed sloths. It's a thing.
Oh. It's a thing.
It's an actual thing. Seriously. Get down. Oh, I'll get you one. I'll get you one. And then you have it in reserve for Christmas or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, see, I'm glad it's not just my child then. I was just like, maybe he's just insanely spoiled and just keeps like changing his mind. But he just doesn't stop. And then even like I organised his birthday. He had his party the other weekend and he wanted this animal man to come. Booked this animal man, like tracked him down, literally like forced him to do our party. And then like a few days later, Carter was like, yeah, I don't want the animal man. So then I had to embarrassingly cancel him and say, I'm really sorry. Our plans have changed. We're really busy. I've made up loads of crap. He cancelled him, had all these like inflatables for outside like bouncy castles and stuff ordered. Then it turned out it was on like the worst day of the year for like a storm and rain. No. Even the bouncy castle man turned up and went, yeah, you've chosen the worst day for this. And then just went in the house and cried because I was like, I've got nothing else. Then had to grovel and ring said animal man and say, any chance you're still free? It wasn't free. And then ended up, in the end, it all worked out. Ended up getting a last minute kids entertainer and it was all fine. But you know, when you just like, you were truly sent to, yeah.
I know. And the thing is, you try and be organised. You think, right, I'll book it months in advance. He's asked for the animal man. We'll get the animal man. So the animal man's not booked up. And it doesn't matter how prepared you are, they will throw a curveball in.
Yeah. I know. And if it was me when I was a kid, my mum and dad would have been like, tough.
Yeah,
but
you're getting the animal man. Put a smile on your face and get out there. Now, exactly. I wanted to ask you, it was Parker who had croup and was really poorly and was in hospital, right? A few months ago?
Yes, all the time.
Is it gone? Is he all right?
Yeah, he's fine now. It just happens every year.
I know. We both have creepy kids.
Do you?
Yeah. The 2 a.m. drive to the hospital.
Yeah.
Usually with a kid wheezing in the background.
Terrible.
Yeah. So Parker has asthma and like this has been like a thing since he was like really young, in and out of hospital. Bronchiolitis, is it? He always used to get.
Yeah, bronchiolitis.
And then like, so we always used to be in and out. And now, croup is the new thing that he's had for the last few years. And I find, actually, when it usually happens is when the weather changes.
Yeah.
So if there's a slight shift in the weather, everyone else is like, yay, either way. And I just think, oh, no, Parker's going to have an attack.
And you know it's coming, don't you?
Yeah.
You go to bed that night, because it will always happen in the night as well. It'll never happen in the day. You go to bed that night looking at your partner saying, okay, so we just have to be ready because tonight is probably the night.
It's going to be the night. So I have the steroids ready now, Dave.
How did you get them? We couldn't get them.
Where did you get your hands on them?
Because it just happened so often. We were in and out, or like... so many times.
They were sick of
the end, the paediatrician that we used was just like, you may as well have them at home because then it could stop you from having to go into hospital. Mm. So we do that now.
When do we need to ask for these?
I wept on a paediatrician last time. It was 3 a.m. I was in Cornwall, Royal Cornwall Hospital. It had happened in the middle of, like, we were staying in the arse end of Cornwall and I had to drive all the way up to get it. And I was like, can you please just give me some in case it happens tomorrow? And they were like, no, can't give you them. Can't take them home.
Private paediatrician.
Well, yeah. Our GP's quite good. What she does is if I email her late at night, she faxes through to our nearest pharmacy and they do a thing where as long as it's administered on site, like they give, he has the steroid on the spot. Yeah. Then they can have it in the pharmacy.
It's just, you just never get used to it, though. It's always terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Every time
anyone not being able to breathe, let alone your child, is the most terrifying
thing. But for Parker, it doesn't always work. Because he has asthma, sometimes the wheeze goes into his chest and then we have to stay in and whatever. So sometimes I'll give it to him. I have to give it 20 minutes. And then if he's still unable to breathe, then we still have to go in.
That's a long time to be worrying. 20
minutes.
Just
staring at the, waiting for them to be able to breathe properly, yeah. And it's so weird because, like, no one in my family has asthma. It's not like something that any of us are used to. And it's just, and he gets terrified now. Like he normally, obviously he used to be scared, but the last time it happened, he was like, am I going to die? And I was just I cry every time. Like, it's just, a whole thing every time.
Yeah, I blame my husband's genes because it's not mine. The weaknesses come from that side of the family.
Poor Simon.
No, we're not having any of that. Right.
Right, talk to us about lockdown, Frankie. Your Instagram outfits kept me going, quite frankly, Frankie.
What, in lockdown?
Yeah, that you didn't do them very often. So when you did, I was just like, yes, something to look
She's
forward
to. She's done another
to.
One.
Another, a fave, do you mean my faves?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? The first lockdown was a novelty. It was hot. I had bought out my last book, which was touring with that. I then went and did a ridiculous trek in Namibia. So I was away from home a lot. So I was really ready to be at home. So I think that first one, I was just like so relieved to just be home, be with the kids, be with Wayne. I bought half of Hobbycraft, got that in. They did that in half a day.
Yeah.
It never lasts.
We planted our own fruit and veg, which never grew like everyone else in the country. because obviously we were going to have to, you know, only be able to have our own fruit and veg.
I love the way we all thought we'd become self-sufficient overnight.
I know,
We're going to be grinding our own flour by...
Washing out by the rocks, you know.
Whatever.
All of that. it was kind of nice. And then second and third just was so rubbish. And I think I'd managed to get my kids like off of their iPads, off of YouTube before lockdown. And in the first one, I was like, yep, do what you want. I can't entertain you all day, every day, like go for gold. It's only going to be 2 weeks. And then like now
6 months
they're like
in,
addicted again. Yeah. It was rubbish, but also, I mean, we didn't have it as bad as a lot of others, but homeschooling was just so crap.
Do you know what? That's the thing. I can cope. You know what? If the world wants to lock down again, lock me down. Lock me down. But do not tell me I have to homeschool my kids again because I can't. I can't.
No.
I can't.
And it's rubbish for them. Like,
it's terrible
eldest,
for them.
He was on Zoom in the end from like 8:30 till 3:30. And I was just like, he is bored off his face. Like, he's having to sit there. He gets a little bit of a break. And like, I'd be that mum that he'd have reading in his lunch break and I just would miss it. Oh, we forgot. Sorry. Or, oh, the internet was down. And if I felt like a lesson was, I'd just pretend the internet went off and whatever. Because I was just like, this is ridiculous. As long as he can read, write and count by the time he goes back to school, that was all I really cared about. Mm. Other than that, I was just like, it's just too much pressure.
It's too much structure for kids that little,
yeah.
I think.
And I couldn't deal with all the other kids that were like, I've done it 5 minutes later, God, or I got 100%, or like, I remember there was this day where Wayne would have Parker and I'd have Carter, and there was one thing where they had to like name as many dinosaurs as they could, and all these kids were coming on, you know, the overachievers, congrats to them, but really annoying on Zoom in lockdown. And they'd be like, oh, I know like 50 dinosaurs, I know whatever. So Wayne googled how many different dinosaurs there were, and I think it was something like 320 or whatever. And Wayne said, tell them you've got 320. So Carter comes on and goes, oh, Parker comes on, I've got 320 dinosaur names. And teacher was like, oh wow, that's a lot, well done Parker. And it's like, yeah. And Wayne, it was nothing to do with Parker. Wayne just standing there like
it brings out the worst in you, yeah, as a does. Parent, doesn't it? It brings out that competitive.
Yeah, because we're not like that at all. But you know, just like.
But also, when they're grown up, how many people are going to march up to them and say, excuse me, how many dinosaur names do you know?
I know. Yeah, but most of it. See, I'm one of those people that education is so important. And, you know, I left school at a really early age, still had an education, but, you know, not like the typical one. But I just find it so hard because I just think a lot of it is so dated. There's so much that they teach them, so much that they stress them out about and us that they never use. And they don't teach them like basic life skills. Like when I bought my first flat, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea how to sort a mortgage. I didn't know that the water bills just naturally came and how to sort everything out and this, that, the other. And I remember at that time thinking, why didn't I learn about this stuff at school instead of like...
Well, I was really mean in lockdown, and every lunchtime after they'd had their lunch, I would do what was called life skills. And this meant they had to go get the laundry, come down, sort it, put it on, hang out whatever was wet, fold up and put away whatever was dry, and load the dishwasher. And they cried every single day and fought over who would do which. They preferred the dishwasher over the washing machine, you see. But I made them do it because I was just like, I'm not having you leave home at 18 and trot off to university without knowing how to turn a washing machine or a dishwasher on. I'm not having it.
But do you remember when we interviewed Nadia Hussein, one of the first podcasts we did, and she makes her kids every Sunday.
True. Yeah.
They have 3 hours where everyone in the family has to clean.
I used to do that as a kid every Sunday.
Did you?
Yeah, and I loved it.
I was going to say, did you hate them for making you do it, or did you quite like it?
No, I loved it. I got the job of the bathroom, and my mum and dad had this like foamy stuff that you cleaned the bathroom with.
Oh, that is quite fun.
And I really enjoyed the foam and like cleaning the bathroom, and I was the duster. And my dad would play like really loud, like Motown music, and like sing, and he'd dance and be silly, and like, I loved it. But if I tried to get my kids to do that now, there's just no chance.
I reckon it's the future, man. Tell them. Tell them it's coming on Sunday.
Tell them they're coming on Sunday.
They've got to do it. Now, what I wanted to ask you about lockdown was about mental health stuff, because you famously shared that you've suffered from depression on and off for your whole life, more or less.
Yeah.
How did Corona and how did lockdowns impact on that for you?
You know what, like I said, at first it was nice, and then as time went on, I found it really difficult to wait to be told how we were allowed to live our lives on a weekly basis. I found that really, really affected my anxiety, because it was just, you didn't know from one week to the next what was going to be happening. And I got obsessed with watching the numbers of deaths and infections and stuff, and in the end I had to just not watch the news and be a bit ignorant to it and just kind of wait for the announcements for what we were and weren't allowed to do.
And did you make that decision yourself, or did someone say, come on, I think this isn't good for you, you need to switch off?
No, I did that myself.
That's
because
good.
I just knew I was obsessing over it, and I just thought, in the least obnoxious way, it doesn't make a difference if I know the numbers. Like, even now, they do them on a daily basis, and I think, obviously, people want to know, but it's just not nice, is it? I don't want to hear that every day.
It's not helpful.
It's not helpful.
Well, you need to know yourself, don't you? And some of us can't cope with that. We just can't, because it sends our brains into that overdrive.
Yeah. It's just that it's like still here. And I think it's funny, actually, when things started to lift, that was actually where my anxiety was at its worst, which is probably the opposite to everyone else. Like, I remember ringing my therapist and her being like, you are my only patient that I've not heard from for this whole time.
Oh, see, I don't think that's unusual at all.
No, I think that's normal, because then we were being tasked with, oh my God, but they said this thing is really scary, and now they're saying we have to do normal things.
Yeah, and I have really bad social anxiety. So for me, not having to say yes to things that I wanted to say no to was like a breath of fresh air. Like I have a really bad, I can't say no. And then I'll like have bad anxiety about this thing that I don't want to do. And I've said yes. And so that was really nice. And then, yeah, then being told this big scary thing, but now you can go out in it. And I found that really difficult of kind of figuring out how I felt about it. And like everyone, I reassessed a lot about my life and I was like, I don't want to go back to that. Like treadmill of life, like every day again. Like I like parts of this and how am I going to put that into my new life? And and then I found with the kids it was difficult to explain to them, like, oh, we can go and see Nanny and Grandad now. Oh, so have the germs gone? No, but we're allowed now. Like it's a really weird thing to explain to a kid that nothing's changed, but it has.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's very weird.
But they just kind of accept it. But
yeah. So how do you live with the anxiety around it now? Specifically COVID, I mean, not just generalized anxiety.
Yeah, no, you know what, I'm a lot better now. I think because things have lifted so much, but also it's just that thing in the back of your mind. Like I'm always terrified that I'm doing the wrong thing. Is this allowed? Are these the new rules now? Okay, you don't have to wear a mask, but should I wear a mask? Are everyone still wearing masks? Am I standing too close? Like, it's now really hard to navigate what people are comfortable with. And I feel like it's just a daily thing now of wherever you go. Are you hugging? Are you not hugging? And it's different for, like, at work, everything's still really strict. So when I come out into, like, normal life, for me, I still think everything's still really strict, but it's not. And like I went for dinner last night, took a mask, no one had masks on, but ITV, everyone still wears masks, everyone's still social distancing, you still get your temperature check.
It's a very confusing place to be, isn't it? None of us really know, as you say, the etiquette of you don't have to wear a mask, but are you going to be offended if I don't wear a mask? And if you're anxious, that's actually really anxious making. I agree.
Because you're not giving your brain a rest. We're not giving our brains a chance.
And that is what it is. My brain just can't switch off. I just don't know, like, where we stand at any point. And then we went away and we were really lucky to go away to see my sister in Bermuda. And that was just so stressful. And I just thought, is this how it's going to be now?
What was stressful about it? You mean the travelling?
Yeah, just all the tests, making sure we had everything we needed, all the paperwork, things taking too long, things being delayed. Is anyone going to be positive? Are we going to be stuck there? Are we going to have to self-isolate there? Are we going to be able to get back? You know, all these things now that you have to think about kind of takes the edge off of the niceness of going away.
Yeah, spontaneity's completely gone out.
Oh, it's just gone. And I'm not an organised person. You know, I'm not someone that books a dinner in 3 weeks' time. I'm someone that goes, do you want to go for dinner tonight? Yeah, like that's how I am. And you just can't live like that anymore.
We went on holiday and you have to have booked every night that you want to do something on holiday because it's all booked up months in advance. And it's really hard for parents to kind of navigate kids who are hungry and not be able to go somewhere.
Well, and as an anxious person on holiday, what you really need to do is switch off instead of having to plan what you're doing the next night and the next night and the next night.
Yeah. And the kids, you know what kids are like? They might not be in the mood that night, or they might not want pizza that night.
Might not be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might
not be. I know. So it is, you know, I mean, first world problems in that holidays. But I just think in general, everyone still just feels like, yes, there was this whole freedom day. But let's face it, it's not at all. And there's still just so much anxiety. And what freaks me out is like the divide now with everything, you know, with the vaccinations and things like that. Like, I hate all that. I hate the thought that the country is in this, a bit like when Brexit happened. You know, like I got in my car the other day to work and I had an hour and a half of this guy talking to me about the politics of the vaccine and not having the vaccine and corona and the money they're making and this for an hour and a half. And I was going to have like my vocal cords looked at and I was like, I'm going to have a camera shoved up my nose into my throat in like an hour and a half. I just want to chill and not stress.
So I wanted to take you back to talking about your pregnancies. You talked quite openly about how you struggled with pregnancy depression more than PND.
Yeah.
And Annie and I have both had our own run-ins with various postnatal issues and stuff. What makes it so important to you to talk about these things? Because they've obviously affected you, but you don't have to talk about them publicly. So why do you choose to?
I think because I feel like I am in a position within the public eye to be able to use my position in a positive way. And now that I am not in a pop group and, you know, to have that image of everything's perfect and aren't we fun? And, you know, I now can use my position to use my voice. And I never had the confidence to do that back in the day. And I think because I was still figuring out my mental health myself. And obviously it's still an ongoing thing for me, but I understand it and I can talk about it now without being emotional. And I just felt it was important to be able to say, yes, I know from the outside, I look like I have it all. And in some ways I do. I have the career that I wanted. I have my husband, I have my kids. They were all the things that I wanted in my life. Yet I have this illness that makes me unhappy. And I think it's really hard for people to comprehend that. So I felt like I was in the position where I kind of had to talk about it just to help other people. And particularly around pregnancy and with women, I think there is a big pressure on us to love every second of it all. And if you say that you don't, there's this big fear in people thinking that you don't love your kids or that you can't do it. And I think that mental health in general, the chat has come a really long way. But I think for mothers or parents, that conversation still very much needs to happen.
I completely agree with you. I think the thing that, I mean, one of the backbones of NetMums is that we're a site that encourages everyone to talk about their mental health as parents, mm-hmm. and particularly to speak out about pregnancy anxiety or depression or postnatal anxiety or depression, because there is, like you say, this massive stigma that if you speak out, someone's going to come and swipe your children away.
Take your children away.
Or judge you for being a bad parent or not loving them enough. Or
accuse you of being ungrateful. That's the other thing.
Mm. Yeah. And there is a big thing around that. And I think from having a sister that suffered, had fertility issues and really struggled to get pregnant and went through IVF. And actually I had conversations with her where I was like, does it annoy you that I didn't enjoy my pregnancies and things like that? And she's just like, no. And I'm sure that there's people out there that it does, but everyone has their journey and everyone has their ups and downs with it. And we are different and our children are all different. And this judgment and this fear that comes from it really bothers me, because none of us are going to be the same. You know, like if you have more than one child, I have two children. I technically bring them up the same, but they are so different. So there is no better example of that than that. So then why do we expect other parents to parent their children in the same way or to have had the same pregnancy or whatever?
Well, yeah,
as each
of I hear you. I never experienced any pregnancy or postnatal mental health issues, but I had really terrible hyperemesis. You know, when you can't stop puking.
I had that.
With my daughter.
Horrendous.
It was horrendous. But because it was a physical illness, I had all the sympathy in the world. I could tell everyone that I had it. I could tell work that I had it. Like it was, but I know that others who experienced a mental health issue in pregnancy wouldn't have been able to do that and get support and get the help and get just some sympathy and get a hug. And it's terrible that we judge mental health issues as being something that we have to hide, isn't it?
But I think with pregnancy, it's so life-changing. You know, your body changes, the way you think changes the minute you find out you're pregnant. You're thinking about the future. You know, there's a lot happening there, and hormones, like... Hormones are insane.
Yeah. Whoever invented them was nuts.
So unfair. My body hates hormones. Almost to the point where I'm like, I think I should have been a man. Like, they hate me. And I just think, like, I think it's really unfair. I'd have loads of conversations with people where they'd be like, well, you're not ill, though, are you? You're pregnant. And I'm like, when you've had morning sickness, tell me that you're not ill.
Yeah. But even my own husband was like, the turning point was when I came out of the bathroom and I had burst all of the blood vessels around my eyes by puking so much. And he was like, oh, it's really quite bad, isn't it? And I was just, yes, It's been bad for 5 months.
It's like a hangover that won't go. Like, it's that thing of just...
Did you have it with both of them? Did you have it with Carter and Parker?
No, so with Parker, I just had, like, normal morning sickness. I was never sick with Parker, but I would, like...
Feel sick.
Like dry heave all the time. I couldn't go.
I know that sound.
Yeah, we had new dining chairs in our kitchen. I couldn't go in our kitchen for 2 weeks because I could smell the dining chairs.
The smell.
And Wayne was like, I just don't get it. I can't smell them. And I was like, oh, God, I can't. And I had this thing where I kept ordering lamb shank in restaurants. Never even liked lamb shank. Kept ordering it and it would come and I'd be like, oh, I can't eat it. Oh. I did it about 4 times and Wayne was like, what is wrong with you? Just don't order the lamb shank.
I remember my husband had the temerity to cook himself a chicken Kiev when I was I went bananas. I nearly got the house fumigated because I was just like, the smell won't leave.
Garlic. I still can't eat garlic now.
I made him eat it in the dark, in the rain, in the garden because I was just like, get it out of my house. Why did you do that in here?
My friend made her husband take up the floorboards because there was a smell in the kitchen and she was like, I can't go in the kitchen.
No.
So they literally took up all the floorboards to find, I don't know if they ever found anything.
You don't know.
Terrible.
But then with Carter, like luckily hyperemesis came with the second, but then that came with a whole, it's something that's so, there's not really much known about it. And the only way that I could describe to people what I had was to say, oh, you know that thing that Kate Middleton had? Sick. And then they'd kind of understand because no one really knew what it was. And the mental health part of that I found really hard. You know, with Parker I struggled mentally because my body was changing and, you know, I'd always had some form of control over my body and then I lost all of that during pregnancy and I found that really difficult. But with Carter there was this whole new thing of, you know, I was throwing my guts up. I felt horrendous. I couldn't leave my bed. I had a toddler who I couldn't even let come close to me because the smell, he didn't smell, but the smell of him.
I couldn't let my son, I could barely hug or kiss him because the smell of him was so revolting.
And then the guilt that comes with that because you're already worried that you're bringing in another sibling and are they going to feel abandoned? And then that's already started when you're pregnant. And then I pulled out of the Strictly tour at the time. So I felt like I was letting people down. And then I've always had a phobia of being sick. So there was that whole thing. And then having moments of where, is this worth it? Can I do this? Can I do this for the next 9 months? Like, is this going to be worth it? And then the guilt of even thinking that. So there's so much that comes with it. But I remember two moments. One where I don't know why I'd ended up on the floor. That was my happy place for a good old week, I think, just with a duvet and a bowl and my obstetrician saying to Wayne, she needs to come into hospital and me looking up like the exorcist and saying, if you think I'm getting into a moving vehicle, you've got another thing coming. And then just bleh.
Yeah, I remember the day I was admitted to hospital with it, having to get in the car and it feeling like the biggest challenge in the world. It felt like getting in a space rocket or something. Oh. And no sooner had the door shut. In fact, I think the sound of the door shutting made me puke all over the car.
Oh, well, you're a better woman than me because I didn't even get in there. I think I'd prefer to have died at that moment than get in that car.
It's terrible.
And people get PTSD from it. People, you know, recover from it.
Well, it kills. I mean, pre-drip being invented, it killed one of the Brontes. I think Charlotte Bronte died of hyperemesis.
Oh, really? Is that what it was?
Because there's no way of getting rehydrated. Mm. It's terrible.
But I just think, you know, like morning sickness in general, I think we need to stop calling it morning sickness for starters.
Well, it's not in the morning, is it? It's all day. Sickness.
And I think just like, you know, stop saying to people you're not ill, you're pregnant, because until you felt it, you don't bloody know.
No, you don't. So another question I wanted to ask about your mental health candidness is, how does it affect your relationship? And at what stage did you tell Wayne it was a thing? Because it's not like a thing you say on your first date, is it? So, hi, my name is Frankie. And sometimes I get a bit depressed.
Yeah, I'm a bag of crazy marbles. I don't know really when I told him. To be honest with you, I didn't really tell him. He just experienced it. I think, you know what, I'd been
sometimes
really bad.
Sometimes it's the best way.
Yeah, you know, just got to give it to him all from the get-go. I'd been really bad previously to meeting him. And then it was like I met him and everything got better. Aww. And then... I remember the moment of being in our house and kind of knowing he was going to be the person I was going to marry. And, you know, we'd spoken about marriage and kids and stuff. And being in the shower and thinking, I am so happy, but I am fundamentally unhappy. And it's a really weird feeling and really hard for people to understand if they've never experienced that. So I think me being happy made me realise that something wasn't right. And it got to the point where I was coming home from work. It's like I could hold it together at work and then I'd come home and I'd just collapse into a ball of crying. And once I'd start, I couldn't stop. And I would just say things like, I don't want to be here anymore. Everyone would be better off without me.
And do you think that's because you'd kind of held it together all day?
Yeah.
Felt like you'd had to, and then you were just like, I need to let it go.
Yeah, it would just come out. It was like uncontrollable. And then it got, there was a night where Wade and I went out for dinner and I can laugh about it now because it was ridiculous. But at the time it was like breaking point. And I remember he didn't get the right yogurts and I remember looking in the fridge and being like, you don't know me. Oh. You don't know me at all. You've got the wrong yogurts. Had this big meltdown. And he was just like, this isn't right. Like something's not right here. And he's the person that called the doctor and essentially got me admitted into hospital at some point. And he could have ran a million miles. We hadn't been together that long. I think it had been a year or less. And he could have easily have walked away, but he didn't. He tried his best to learn. He tried his best to help. And actually, I think, weirdly, it made our relationship stronger in a way.
That's very inspiring.
You spoke earlier about being in a band and everything having to seem perfect. Do you think that exacerbated the problem? Being on show and having to appear perfect, did it make it worse?
I think so. I always say I came out of the womb anxious. Like I was always that way. And weirdly through S Club Juniors, it kind of was fine. I think where I was a kid, I wasn't really aware. I was just doing what I enjoyed. And, you know, you get to a teenager and you're in the public eye and there's social media and there's online articles written about you and whatever. And I'm a perfectionist, so I'm always thinking, oh, does that person, you know, I could have a million conversations with myself whilst having a conversation. Do they like what I'm saying? Do they like me? Do they think I'm a bad person? Am I a bad person? Should I say this? You know, all these things. And it got to the point in the Saturdays, and I remember the day where we were backstage at one of our shows on tour and we were doing a meet and greet, and I had to stop and take a beat and become Frankie from the Saturdays to walk into the room. And that was kind of when I realised that things weren't right anymore, that I was having to kind of pretend, whereas before I had been one whole person. Mm. So definitely, it definitely made it worse, I think, because you have so many outside voices saying things that you probably already think yourself.
Yeah.
If a parent somewhere, we hope we've got a listener somewhere, a parent somewhere.
Just the one.
Is listening to this, who also struggles with their mental health and is feeling at a loss and is feeling all those kind of failure things. Oh, I'm not a good enough parent because I've got this, and I'm not enough good enough parent because I feel that. What would you say to them?
Like, you're wrong, first of all. Like, our brains are amazing and they can tell us the most ridiculous things. And I think that's what
I've learned. And we believe them.
Yeah, that's what I've learned along the way. It's insane what they tell us and we listen to them and take it for, you know, for fact. But also it's the age old thing, and I know it's really annoying and everyone says it, but to talk to someone, it is like the strongest and the biggest thing you can do. And it doesn't show you as weak. It shows you how strong you are. And I always used to see myself as being a weak person. And now I can honestly say that I look back and I say, I have experienced all these things and still achieved all these other things at the same time. And that is strength. Hiding and pretending that you're okay isn't being strong. And you're not doing
seriously,
that for other people. You're not helping other people by not speaking. If you speak, it gives other people the chance to talk to.
Well, and I think you're a really good example of this. So I can tell you that whenever we write anything about you, it always gets amazing numbers. Like everyone reads it. But we know it's because people admire the fact that you speak out on this stuff. So look, if you can do it,
other people can do it too. Because look, it makes people love you and like you and respect you and think that you're amazing. It never makes anyone think, oh, she's not great, does it?
And also you'll find that actually so many of your friends that you've known for a really long time have suffered at some point with certain things. It might not be the same as you, but at some point. And that was my biggest realization of going, God, I didn't think you were like that, or I never realized you suffered from that. And you're giving those people the, you know, like the chance to do that.
But you talk about putting on Frankie from the Saturdays, and I think we all do that in some way with certain people. Everyone you know puts on Wendy for doing this or Annie doing that. And if you get past that, it's really helpful to see other people are doing the same thing as you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why I remember the first time, you know, obviously back in 2012, I did my first ever article for Glamour magazine when I came out of hospital after my breakdown. And people still talk to me about that article, but I kind of did that and then parked it, didn't really talk about it for a really long time.
But that was very ahead of the curve, Frankie.
I mean,
I'm amazed at how much more open we are as a society now about mental health issues, but you were a massive part of that. That article was a really big deal.
Yeah, it was at the time. But I think that's why then I went back inwards, because I was like, oh, that's a bit scary.
What did I just do?
Whereas now it is so well spoken about. But I remember coming back and speaking about it again, and it was one Christmas. And I always find between Christmas and New Year really difficult for me, because I feel like I'm in limbo. Am I still celebrating? Should I still be in my pajamas, or should I be dressed today? Am I still stuffing my face with biscuits, or should I be back on my health kick for January? Do you know what I mean? Like all these things. Yeah. I'm like, what am I supposed to be doing? And I find it really difficult. And I like, right, I'm going to post about it. And then I was like, am I being a downer? It's Christmas. Are people really happy? Is everyone going to be like, ugh, don't want to hear this right now? And I posted it, and the amount of replies I got saying, I feel the same. And people say that I help them, but they help me just by everyone in the same way that it stops them from feeling alone. It stops me from feeling alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing with all of it. And that's why I talk about it.
Well, we salute you, lady. It's really important stuff that you're doing. Right, from the serious to the kind of, well, the first of our last questions is quite serious. Go on, Wendy, you hit her up with this one.
How do you want to be remembered by your boys?
Oh, God. You know what? I told you were going to ask me this. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't know.
it makes everyone cry.
Yeah, I have this real thing of like, can't deal with death, can't talk about death, it's never going to happen. But I was thinking about it, and I'm not the best at playing games. You know, after 10 minutes of playing trains, I'm bored, and I'm not saying what they want me to say, you know, because they always have a narrative, like they always have a narrative, don't they, of what they
want. Oh, God. The game.
No,
it's
no,
always
the train
in an American accent as well.
Yeah. And you're like, well, I don't know. I just was going off of you and I've gone wrong. You know, this is really bad. So I was really thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? I just want my kids to remember me how I remember. My nan was one of like the most integral people in my life. I feel she was like a real inspiration to me. I felt like she really got me, and she just was so full of love, and all of my friends still love her. Everyone still talks about my nan. And my biggest thing with my kids is I just want them to remember me as loving. You know, I can't tell them or show them enough how much I love them. For me, that is the most important thing. But also to feel that I was understanding, that they could talk to me. I know every parent wants that, but for me, it's so important that my kids feel like they can come and talk to me about anything. And if they're the two things that they remember me by, then that would just, I'll be happy with that.
Yeah, I think they're good things.
Mm.
Now, I get to ask the easy one, which is, what's for tea tonight, Frankie, and who's cooking?
I haven't got a fucking clue. I don't know.
Another club that the three of us can start.
I mean, they're lucky if they get dinner tonight. Do you know what I mean? You know what? For the kids, it'll be whatever's in the freezer, which will probably be fish fingers and chips and some sort of vegetable that they won't eat.
Yeah. Also sounds familiar.
It just
familiar.
Makes me feel better if it's on the plate.
Yeah.
And for the adults, because it's actually Wayne's fake 40th tomorrow.
Ooh.
We had to delay his 40th birthday last year, like loads of people.
Right.
So it's actually 41, but we're pretending it's his birthday.
You're having a massive bash.
We're having a party. Ooh. And so I've got quite a few people here tonight. So it'll be some sort of takeaway.
Now, don't go too early. Don't go hard tonight because you'll live tonight.
Well, no, I've told Wayne there's no drinking. I'm a rubbish drinker, so I won't be drinking anyway. But I don't want him to be chasing his hangover. Do you mean
you're a rubbish drinker, like one and you're away?
Oh, yeah, I can't drink. I'm so bad. So bad. Like, just, Wayne made me, like, 2 strawberry daiquiris in lockdown and I was dancing on my own in the garden and his mum had to put me to bed.
Oh, please tell us there's a film of that.
I think there is a film of me dancing on my own. Gratefully not of my mother-in-law putting me to bed.
It's always a life high point, isn't it? The mother-in-law putting you to bed.
Especially when you're 32, whatever I'm saying. So it'll just be some sort of takeaway that none of us can agree on because no one likes to make the decision. And I have 2 vegans, so it will be down to them, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Right, last question. And Wendy, I left it for you because I know you love asking it.
Frankie Bridge, imagine that you are tucking Annie and I into bed, that we are your children, and sing us your lullaby.
Even though we're older than you.
Oh, yeah. We never really did lullabies, but our family song is Don't Worry, Be Happy. So, you know, ooh, 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 ooh. Don't worry, ooh, be happy. Ooh. That's it. Like, it's Wayne and his dad sing it all the time. And if we're all asleep and Wayne's awake, he plays it really loud in the bedroom to wake us up. And it just puts everyone in a good mood.
Do you know, I don't think I've ever played that to my kids, but you've inspired me. I'm going to introduce them to that.
You
this
should.
Weekend.
They love it. And Three Little Birds by Bob Marley.
Yeah, my kids love that.
Because they learned that at school. And I just think it's such a feel-good song. Like, if you're feeling a bit, it just makes you happy. And that
makes
is basically...
Makes me cry, though, Frankie. Makes me cry.
Oh, but everything makes you cry. Oh, no.
But I just, that is, you know, at the end of the day, that's all we want. Like, all I want is for them to be happy. So, so that's it.
Oh, thank you so much, Frankie. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and good luck with the party.
Thank you.
Yes, we want lots of photos on Insta. If you dance to the point where your mother-in-law has to put you to bed again, can you please share the video to your Insta
stories? I will,
that's all
but
we
only
ask.
For you.
Yeah.
Thank
Take
you.
Care, Frankie.
Bye.
Bye.